This is HPR episode 2658 entitled, Questions on Podcast Production. It is hosted by Al and is about 46 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Al asks Dave questions about podcast production.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Hacker Papa Radio. I'm Al.
I'm Dave.
And we decided that, because they're calling for shows, and that I wanted to ask Dave, who kind of does lots of podcasts and does the post-production. I am a host of a podcast called the Abnabin Podcast, and I wanted to ask Dave some questions about how the best way to record the audio for a podcast in the post-production. I'm thinking of doing the National Podcast Post Month, which is an annual thing in November where you get to post or produce and post a podcast every day. And I wanted to record or work out what the best way of producing and making the best audio. The reason why is that I always find it really difficult to kind of listen to bad audio and podcasts. And it can be a bit of a criticism for me because obviously on my Abnabin podcast in the early days, the audio wasn't that great. It wasn't down to me doing the audio. It was down to the guys who was doing it at the other end. But now, Dave, obviously you picked it up and it's a lot better. So I wanted to kind of ask you some questions and see where we can kind of go. So what's your kind of take on the bad podcast audio?
Well, to be perfectly honest, bad audio, I think, is one of the things that's going to kill a podcast. I will start by saying that with Abnabin, it is not an easy task to get the audio of a suitable quality or of a suitable level between multiple participants. Where there is just one of you, so doing a solo podcast, you've only got to concern yourself about how you sound. But when you're including one or more additional participants, then trying to make sure that they're the same level, that they are of the same relative quality, it does get a little bit complex in that respect. But audio on a podcast in general, I think as a rule, certain podcasters need to be smashed over the head. And I say that in the nicest possible way, but I've picked up in the last few months quite a few new podcasts in the true crime arena. So I've picked up a new podcast called One Eye Open, which is hosted by a lass called Steffi. She's based here in the UK. And the production quality on that podcast is incredibly good. The audio is good. The background music is good and it's appropriate. Her delivery style is pretty much spot on. So as a podcast, it is quite enjoyable to listen to. But through her show and through interactions with other people on Twitter, I've started listening to other true crime podcasts as well. And I'm not going to name any names, but some of the ones that I have picked up and have started listening to, I'm in the process of deciding to sack them off because the quality of the audio is not necessarily such of an issue, but the level is really, really difficult to hear. Now, I consume the majority of my podcast in the car on the way to and from work. And it's a relatively old car. It's a little bit noisy, But the fact that I have to have my phone volume cranked up to the maximum and my stereo volume cranked up to the maximum in order to not be able to hear what people are saying suggests that something is wrong.
Yeah, I know. That's one of my questions for later on, is the level and like, because I don't understand. Sometimes you have to turn up the phone volume really loud and the car stereo right up to the max to get the kind of out of it. I mean, I was listening to some of the self-help podcasts, and like one of my listeners had a really good subject, but the way they were recording this guest was like over the phone, and it was just too difficult to listen to. So it's three different levels. So I just basically binned it off straight away, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of confusion over what is the right level for individual voices to be placed at. Now, there is something called loudness, which is nothing to do with peak level or volume. It's to do with how your ear perceives loudness. So you could have, you've recorded stuff in Audacity before. You know about the waveform that you get as you're recording. And if you look at your Audacity now, as you're recording, you'll probably see that you're, I don't know, about half the height of the full grid.
Yeah.
As you're talking.
Like now I'm talking, I can see it's between 0.5 and minus 0.5.
Right, which is about perfect. Now, you might think that that's quite quiet, but when you're listening to it, you'll discover that it's a really nice, reasonable level to listen to, because it's not just about how loud it is or how amplified it is, but it's about how the sound itself is formed and how it's positioned. Now, when I do podcast production, either for my own show, The Bugcast, or for Admin Admin, what I do is I put the audio through a service which levels the loudness for you so that it is at a set level throughout the entirety of the recording. If you record individuals, one who is relatively quiet and one who is relatively loud, if you just amplify it with an Audacity, all you're doing is making the loud part louder and the quiet part marginally louder. So you're still going to get that same difference of loud and soft, loud and soft, loud and soft as you go through. And what this service does, which I'll talk about later, actually, it levels off the individual parts. So it gives the perception that the loudness is the same across them. It's a really quite a clever concept. And to be fair, it's not that difficult to use. So it is something I do recommend.
So I thought maybe we could go through our kind of our podcasting setup first, our audio setup, and then we could then kind of talk about some more questions I have. I've got Q2U, which I think is the same mic as which you have, isn't
it? It is, yes.
So it's basically, I got recommended when I started, it's got a USB on the back of it. So when you plug it into your PC, it actually comes as an audio device. And it's also got an XLR at the back of it. So in case in future, if you wanted to get a mixer, you can plug it into a mixer. But mine goes into USB into my Linux machine. I've got it basically on the mic arm and a pop filter. And that's normally just record into Audacity. That's my little setup I have. So what about you, Dave?
Okay, so when you say pop filter, are you talking about the round circular thing that sits in front of the microphone, or is it like a sock that goes over the end of the microphone?
No, like a round circle kind
of
thing.
Gotcha, okay. So my setup, as you've quite rightly said, I've got a Samsung 2QU as well, but I'm using it in XLR through to a mixer, which is connected to my studio PC through USB. I've also got it on an arm with, like I say, with a pop filter over the end of it, but I've also got a shock mount on the microphone itself, meaning that if I tap the microphone, you can hear it. But if I tap the boom arm that it's connected to, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being is that wherever you have your boom arm connected to, which is probably likely to be the desk that you're actually sitting at, when you tap on the table, like I just did, it doesn't come through the arm into the microphone. And this shock mount was dirt cheap. I think it costs about £10 from Amazon. It's not the best thing in the world. It is starting to fall apart a bit, but it still does its job quite nicely.
Yeah. Oddly, I've got my arm hanging down from like a shelf above me because it doesn't really work the other way around for me.
So. No, and I understand that. No, so the idea of putting a shock mount in is probably unnecessary for you, because unless you're going to be tapping on the shelf, you won't suffer from the same sound issue as that.
So where does that plug into? Is that, did you say it goes into a mixer?
So yeah, it goes into a mixer, which is then connected via USB to my studio PC. So it's essentially the same as the setup you've got, but I've got a mixer between the microphone and the PC. The reason we've done it that way is because in our setup, we have two microphones.
Okay.
And having two USB devices as sound devices can be problematic when you're doing setups like this. But also, we still have yet to get around to re-recording the Ogcamp chat that we did as a family after we went to Ogcamp in August. Because the way I recorded it, it was abysmal. I wasn't going to let that get published. but I have actually got a handful of more microphones in a box down here, which I can plug into the mixer, so we can have four microphones live at a time.
Okay. And so that means you can kind of adjust levels on that without doing it in the computer then, I'm guessing, with the slidey things.
Yeah, you can. You can do that. You've got you've got tone controls as well, so you can adjust the top end and bass and mid-range also. But this one also has an additional functionality, is that there is an inline compressor on the channel itself.
Okay, so what is a compressor? Because I've heard about it before, people talking about it.
So I can't give you a technical definition of it because I'm not a professional audio engineer, but in essence, what it does is it makes an attempt at bringing up the quieter bits and bringing down the louder bits, so that when you're speaking normally, you're at a certain level. If I start to speak really loudly, in theory, you're still at the same level. You just sound like you're louder, but you're not. But if you start talking really quietly, you can still hear me very clearly because of how the compressor's working. So it's working in the background to try and make it so the variance of natural speech, where sometimes you'll be louder and sometimes you'll be quieter, tries to retain pretty much the same level across all different different ranges. That's a non-technical description.
Okay, and so there is a couple of different kinds of mic, isn't there, as well, with the record. If you could, I can never remember. One is it records directly. You have to be sitting in front of it, like our mics, and if you move away from your face, away from the mic, it doesn't kind of pick it up so much. Where you can get the other kind of mic, where it picks up like 360, like one of those snowballs.
Yeah, so that's to do with pickup patterns. Yeah. So the pickup pattern that we've got on our microphones is called cardioid, which essentially means that it's only going to pick up noises that occur directly in front of it, yeah, or slightly from side to side. The other one, which I think the Blue Yeti has an option for, is omnidirectional, which means it can pick up sounds from all around it, which is not necessarily conducive to a recording situation such as this, because when you're talking just you into a microphone, or in the setup we've got here, two people talking into two microphones, you don't want to pick up sound from anywhere else other than directly in front of it.
Yes. If not, if you have like a woman gets everywhere, you can obviously, if you've got a PC or something in the background, that can pick up. And if you've got to cough, you can kind of come away from the mic so it doesn't get picked up.
Or it won't get picked up as loudly, certainly.
Yes.
I mean, if I'm directly in front of my microphone at the moment. If I kind of go directly 90 degrees to one side of it, I'm now talking directly at the microphone, but I'm talking at a right angle to it. It really drops the sound out quite significantly.
So what's the best, I'm guessing the best area to record a podcast is a nice quiet area.
It is, but I recognize that in a lot of situations that's not always possible. Now, you mentioned about the different pickup types of microphones, but there are different capsule technologies of microphones as well. The kind of microphone we've got is a dynamic mic. And dynamic mics are much better suited to areas that may be prone to background noise. So I'm really fortunate here that where I am at the moment, we call it the studio, but it's just like an extension to the kitchen. Mm-hmm. There is very little background noise. In fact, the only noise I can hear at the moment is coming from the studio PC, but it's such a small fan, you can't hear it anyway. But if the heating was on, I can see the boiler from here, then you wouldn't necessarily hear it through the microphone unless I was speaking, if that makes sense, because I've got a gate on this, on what you're listening to, I've got a gate, but on this recording, I don't. So you wouldn't necessarily note that. But with a condenser microphone, which is the other kind, condenser mics are usually used by professionals in professional environments where they are operating in sound booths, because condenser mics do have a much better audio quality, in my opinion. However, if a gnat farts in the corner of the room, the condenser microphone will pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
They're so sensitive to noise around them. Before we got these Samson mics, we did have a pair of condenser mics, Behringer C1s, I think they were. And the sound quality was really, really good. But if there was any background noise whatsoever, it picked it up. And, you know, that can be problematic.
So the next thing is about, we normally record in Audacity, is to my terms, what levels is what gets me. And I think unless you're like a really good audio kind of person, you know, audio, for non-audio person, I think that's quite hard to understand. I don't think if you've got like a magician's, a musical musician's air kind of thing, it is knowing that kind of level kind of thing. Because I know that when you talk, you can see that you were saying earlier about the waveform going between 0.5 and minus, but there's another thing where you can see where it like gets, it starts from like minus 57 all the way to like zero kind of thing, and the louder you talk, it does peak out.
Absolutely. So in Audacity, and I would imagine a lot of other audio workstation packages as well, when you're recording, you usually get some kind of volume meter. The one that I've got on my screen, which is at the very top of the screen in Audacity, is measuring the sound that is being recorded directly from what's coming in through the mixer. And as you say, it's a scale that runs from minus 57 to zero. And so that's a scale where zero is the absolute maximum that you should be recording at. If you go above zero, what will happen is there's a little red mark on the right-hand side, just to the right of zero, which will stay on to say at some point recently you have peaked and gone over that level. Now, when you're talking normally, you'll see that up to a point, that bar is green, and that's where you want your level to be. Under normal circumstances, keep your volume, your recording level, into the green. If you go into the yellow a couple of times, doesn't really matter. But if you find yourself staying in yellow, creeping up to orange, maybe even going into red, then either your level is too high or you're too close to the microphone. Now, when you're doing a recording at any particular time, it's not always as easy to, if you've got a mixer, to adjust the level, or if you're using something like Audacity, to have to move your mouse across to the little slider on the right-hand side and take your microphone level down a bit. The easiest way to get around that is just to back up from the microphone a smidge until you're back into level.
That's handy to know then, because I have peaked a couple of times.
So have I.
But that's why I think it's always good to have that Audacity on the screen for me anyway, to kind of see when I do peak, so that it's as a visual reminder. So, and I'm guessing, does it matter if you've got different people, if you've got multiple people recording, that you want to keep everyone the kind of the same kind of level, or that better be done in post-production.
If you're in different locations, then it's next to impossible to ensure that everybody is keeping to the right level. It's kind of down to the individual to make sure that they're staying at the level that is as optimal as possible. In order to level off when you're in post-production, so after everything's been recorded, you've got your distinct audio files, and this is a very good argument for each individual to record their own audio locally, rather than having everybody recorded in the same audio file, because you then have that ability to level off the individual channels, to remove things. I coughed earlier. I'll edit that out, so you won't have heard it. things like that. But you can't do that easily if you have all the audio merged together in one file. So if both you and I were speaking at the same time, there's no way to identify in the file itself who is speaking at any particular time, and you can't isolate one individual out of that. If you're recording your own file locally, then by combining them after the fact as separate tracks in a package like Audacity, as long as you've lined them up, then it's then easy to isolate individual items, like if I drop my keyboard or click the mouse or something like that, to be able to remove those.
Once you've obviously recorded, I mean, you normally want us to save the file as a FLAC file, which I'm guessing is a lossless format.
Yeah, so FLAC is it's classified as a lossless format because it is compressed, but when you uncompress it, it is back in the original form. Audio formats like MP3, OGG, M4A, I think is the one that the Apple seems to prefer. They're classified as lossy, which means that they do get compressed to make the file smaller with no appreciable loss of quality. But when you uncompress them, you have lost some definition. You will lose some of the data within there. A classic way to demonstrate this is to go through a cyclical process of recording a piece of audio, save it as an MP3, close it, open it up in Audacity as an MP3, and then export it as an MP3, and do that a few times. And what you'll discover is that the file you get out of the end of it after three or four attempts of doing this is going to sound really quite bad, because you're compressing a compressed audio file again and again and again. When you do it through a format like FLAC or ALAC, which is the Apple equivalent, because it decompresses back to its original form, you don't get that loss of fidelity. So it'll always be as good as it started off. So when you're doing post-production, so like with the Admin podcast, I always ask you guys to send me the files in FLAC format, because I'm going to be loading them in and making changes to them and then saving them again. If you sent me the files in MP3 format, I'd be taking an already reduced quality file in the form of an MP3, making changes to it, and then saving it as an MP3 again, which means you'll be compressing an already compressed and uncompressed file. Which is, to be honest, that's how I started podcasting. I started podcasting by recording as in MP3 and then editing it, saving it as an MP3. And you can tell the difference. It's slight, but you can tell the difference.
Something I did mention before we would go to kind of on the post-production side is about audio monitoring and like listening to yourself while you're talking, kind of thing, because I never really got on with that. I think when I first got my mic, I used it once, but then it never. But that's because I haven't managed to get it working. But I think on the mics we've got, you can plug your headphones directly in the back of your of the mic to. But I haven't managed to get it working. Have you got Do you do that, or how have you got that set up, and what's the benefit of doing it?
I'm just going to try something. Give me a second, because I've just now unplugged my headphones, and I'm going to plug my headphones in the back of my microphone, and I can't hear myself. And I think that's because the self-monitoring of the 2QU, Q2U microphone even, only works in USB mode. So no, that doesn't work for me. It certainly should work for you, because when you plug your microphone into the USB port, all the audio input and output should be redirected to the microphone. So the microphone then, the headphone socket on your microphone then becomes your speakers.
Yes.
So anything from the from your computer, from your laptop, any audio played from that should then come through your earphones. That's how it should work. Going back to the original question about monitoring, yeah, it can be incredibly disconcerting to listen to your own voice as you're talking. The way we've got our audio set up here is there is a minute delay between me talking and then me hearing myself, which is also incredibly off-putting. But after a while, you get used to it. If you're only recording for your own benefit and you don't want to hear yourself, then you don't need to wear headphones at all. If you're just talking to yourself, if you're just recording yourself and no one else, then if you don't want to hear yourself, take your headphones out, because that way you'll hear yourself better through your own ears. But if you're talking to other people like we are now, by having your own voice coming back to you, you're hearing yourself at the same level as you're hearing the person you're talking to. One thing I have noticed is if you are having a conversation with somebody, let's say on the phone, you're on a phone call, you've got your earbuds in or your headphone or headset on, and you're on the phone to somebody, you'll find that if they're talking and you want to interrupt them, you start to shout, because you can't hear yourself over them, because they're in your ears and you're not. So the idea of having you being able to hear yourself while you're recording, as I said, as off-putting as that may be, it does actually make for a much more natural interaction between the person you're talking to, because both you and they are at the same level. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So moving on to the post-production, so once you've got your file, what kind of things do you do to make it sound better, or what's your workflow?
So using, I'm going to have to use admin as the reference point here, because I don't do any post-production editing on the Bugcast. What gets recorded is what gets released as a podcast, which is can be interesting.
I had noticed it sounds okay to me. So. But I haven't got the good ears though.
Yes, so. Sometimes I do wish I did edit it, but because we record it and stream it live as we go, it seems pointless editing out for the podcast when the people that listen live got it as it came out. And I suppose it kind of reins us in a little bit. If we know that we are not going to be editing stuff out, we tend to be a little bit more restrained of the kind of things we can potentially get away with. Anyway, back to the point. On admin, as part of the process of post-production, which I will admit does take a fairly reasonable amount of time to do, I go through, well, once I've aligned the tracks, so I get your audio, I get Jerry's audio, I get John's audio, and I then align them so that when you play them back, you're playing them back in the right chronological sequence. Now, the trick that you guys employ is you say a word at the same time. So that could be biscuits. It could be, I think you did Ansible once. All I've got to do is find that word in the recording and align the three tracks up so that you're all saying that at the same time. And then as long as I don't move them, then that should be the correct alignment for the tracks for the entirety of the show. So the next thing to do once you've done that is start to go through. And what I do is I actually start to play it. I play the show from that point and look for things that possibly shouldn't be there. So mouse clicks, coughs, burps. Yes, I have edited out a number of burps in the past. Mouse clicks, breathing. Breathing down the microphone is a common thing, but it's not a problem because it gets edited out anyway. Sometimes the flow of the show will stop because somebody needs to go and find something, like I did earlier on. But again, that'll get edited out, so the listeners won't hear it. That I tried to remember the name of a podcast, forgot it. So I went off and opened my phone and found it and then carried on. But that'll get removed from the final sequence because of how it was recorded. So going through the entirety of that, it is a time-consuming process. If you've got a podcast that is, let's say, an hour long, 60 minutes, I think it's fair to say that it would probably take three, maybe more than 3 hours to go through it, to remove all of those artifacts. But it's, in my opinion, it's worth it because of how it improves the experience of listening to the show in the first place. Because if you've got somebody who is clicking a mouse, Al, but you are clicking your mouse at the moment. Doesn't bother me in the slightest. The listeners won't hear it because I'll edit it out. But it's a natural thing to do. You're going through, we've both got documents in front of us. We're going to be scrolling up and down them and typing in them.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff can be removed because the listener doesn't need to know that.
No.
It's almost as though you're creating an illusion of how things should have been as opposed to what happened in reality. And in fact, another thing, although we're recording ourselves locally, we're actually communicating in real time over Mumble. And when when I first started producing Admin, we took the recorded files that came out of Mumble rather than locally recorded Audacity. And there was a serious problem with the way that Mumble recorded it, is that if you spoke too loudly and it clipped, it actually sounded distorted. It was a really horrible sound. So I did my best on those recordings to try and go through and remove as much of that crackly sound as possible without removing the word that was being said at the time, which it's a forensic process. You have to zoom right into the waveform and find where these distortions are. They're fairly easy to spot, so it's not that big of a deal. But as you're going through, you know, an hour's worth of audio, it does take a while to pull that kind of those kind of artifacts out. Fortunately, because we're now using the Audacity recordings, we don't get those artifacts, so it's helped speed things up a bit. But they're all things that you need to consider when you're editing a podcast, or even when you're recording a podcast, to try and reduce the amount of post-processing that you need. Yeah. That, you know, that's why we changed from using the Mumble recorded files to the Audacity ones.
Okay.
Just to make the audio cleaner.
Yeah, and trying to be more better, not clicking the mouse, and yeah, would make your job a lot easier.
Well, that's not really a problem, to be fair. But I suppose it depends very much on the generosity of your producer.
So you say you remove it. Do you mean just like silencing it? Or I'm guessing you must, if someone's already speaking, someone's clicking the mouse on the person who's not speaking, I'm guessing you just silence that audio out.
Absolutely. So if you've got your three tracks in front of you, the way I lay the tracks out for you three, yours is on the top, then Jerry's, then John's, alphabetical, you understand. So if John is speaking, which is invariably the case, and you're clicking your mouse, then it's very easy. All I have to do is just highlight the section of audio where those mouse clicks appear. Just that one track where the audio is that you want to remove. And then if you go into the edit menu, remove special and then silence audio, it effectively just silences that particular highlighted section of audio. You can't delete it because that will put everything after it out of alignment.
That was what I was guessing.
Yeah. So you would just... all it does is it just... That piece of highlighted audio just gets put down to zero. It's effectively as though it never existed in the first place. But it's still there in time. You've still got those 2 or 3 seconds of audio there, but it's silent.
So once that bit's done, so you've deleted all the bits, the coughs and everything out, what's the next kind of stage to do?
Okay, so once it's been edited down, so the three or however many audio channels you've got are clean, and you've topped and tailed it so that the stuff that came before it and the stuff that's come after it aren't there anymore, you've effectively got your final mix of audio. Okay, now you may have music to put in, you may have an introduction to put in, but that is your core audio done and dusted. So I suppose it depends on what you wanted to do next. The process I go through is I go through and use a service called Orphonic that I did hint to earlier on in the conversation. And what that does, I send all three audio files through Orphonic. And what it does is it levels them for me, but it levels them using loudness rather than the amplitude, the actual waveform. So when you get your tracks back, it's actually merged them together into one track. It's called a multi-track production. You put your three tracks in, you specify you want them leveled, and it then merges them into one file that you get back with all three tracks merged into one. So at that point, you're kind of at the stage now where you can't do any more cleansing of that file because it's all been merged together. Once that file comes out, to be fair, that file is good enough to publish, in my opinion. But if you then have further stuff to do, like if you have an introduction that's recorded separately with the admin stuff, because the introduction is recorded in exactly the same way, I do exactly the same thing to it, even though it's only, you know, 20, 30 seconds long. Three files, clean them, top and tail them, export them, stick them into a phonic, multi-track, level them, one file out. So I end up with one short file that's an introduction, one longer file that's the actual show content, and then I just put tunes around them to finish off, and then that becomes the final episode that I then send to you for publishing on the site.
So you put the music in afterwards, or the intro and outro after it's been through that service?
Yes, in the case of admin, yes, the music is the last thing to go in.
Okay, and how does that work with the like levels and stuff? The kind of thing I'm thinking in my head. Do you do that in Audacity or something else? Or
no, it's done in Audacity. So okay. The two audio files from recording, so the intro and the main section, I put those in and put them roughly in the place that they need to be. So the intro goes in at about, I don't know, 10 or 15 seconds in from the audio, and then the main part goes in about 5 or 10 seconds after the introduction's finished. And then I take a series of snippets that I've created from the theme tune, and the theme tune is looped. So there's one part that is just it's very difficult to explain this. So there's one part that is just the very first part of the theme tune. Then there's another part in the middle that gets repeated for as long as the intro is happening. And then there's another part where the intro theme tune fades out. So if the intro is 5 seconds long, which it typically isn't, or the intro is a minute and a half long, which it typically isn't, by having that repeating section in the middle, it doesn't matter, because all will happen is you'll get that initial start of the theme tune, and then a repeating portion, and then a fade out at the end. And the all the listener hears is some music in the background, but it doesn't feel out of place, because the various segments that are used to make up however long the intro is going to be, they're designed to be placed together. So if you take your first bit and then three or four middle bits and then your fade out bit at the end, it sounds like it works because of how they've been created, how they've been sized. Okay. And exactly the same happens with the outro as well.
Yeah, and then you can just export it as an MP3 and then I can publish it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I like the idea of that. What's it called again? Orphonic,
yeah.
Orphonic, okay. We'll put a link in the show notes for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything else? You covered most of my questions, what I've asked about, what the post-production is and the getting the recording audio. I mean, if I'm going to do my the 30 days of November, is that right? 30 November? I'm guessing it's 30 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I'm doing it just on myself, I'm guessing just using that, it's going to be a lot more easy than trying to edit multiple tracks into one kind of thing. So are you planning to do it as well then, Dave?
I am, yes. It's not my first attempt at Napod Pomo. I think it's either my fourth or fifth attempt. I say attempt, you know, I have completed it, but I didn't do it last year, but I did do it in 2016. I just fancied doing it again for the chuckles, and I'm going to try and, I think last time I did it in 2016, I made the mistake of not planning it in advance, not having a purpose for doing it. And as a result, I dried up fairly early. It was about day 7 or day 8 where I actually ran out of ideas and thought, you know what, forget this, I'm just going to play music. And ended up talking for about 2 minutes and then playing a song at the end of it, which wasn't where I wanted it to go. So this year I'm putting in some planning time. And one of the things I want to do is at least once a week, I want to get on somebody else who is doing Napod Pomo as well. So in addition to you, there's at least two other people that I know, two other podcasters who are going to be doing Napod Pomo this year. And I figured it might be fun to do crossover episodes where, let's say, you and I record an episode together and we release the same episode on both of our Napod Pomo feeds.
Sounds like a plan. But I'll put a link in the show notes to my feed, and I guess we'll put a link to your feed as well so that we've got them.
So I haven't decided where it's going yet, but yes.
Yeah, I haven't decided yet either. That's why I was trying to revamp my website the other day from the 2000s when I had it with just a normal HTML site, now bring it into a WordPress site. Okay. Thank you very much for your time, Dave. It's been really helpful.
It's been fun. I would like to end by saying when it comes to doing podcasting, it really isn't rocket science. Just because I've got a setup that has multiple microphones and a mixing desk and a dedicated studio PC and a dedicated stupid studio area, I've been podcasting for over 10 years. So because podcasting is such a big part of who I am and who we are as a family here, it's only natural that we've actually managed to build up this kind of equipment over time. But I'll be perfectly honest, you can get a pretty decent sound quality out of a mobile phone. Just recording into the microphone on the mobile phone. There are very inexpensive, and I'm talking like £1.50, $2 perhaps, what are called lapel microphones or lavalier microphones that you can buy off of Amazon, which you can attach like a tie clip, the kind of ones they use on telly. You put it on your collar or something like that, plug that into your mobile phone and just record from that. And the quality is really, really good, but it also means A, you don't have to hold your phone, and B, you get a consistent sound out of it because the microphone doesn't move. But you know, you, you don't have to be a professional. You don't have to have, you know, spend loads of money on equipment. You don't have to spend money on websites. There are plenty of web services that will host your audio for podcasting. Anchor is one. Audio Boom is another one, but I don't know whether they're actually struggling at the moment. I heard rumors that Audio Boom might be either being bought or sold or something in the not too distant future. But there are plenty of places you can record and host your audio for free. Hacker Public Radio, of course, being one of them.
Yes. Yeah, thanks again, Dave. I'm guessing we'll catch us on another show sometime.
Well, you haven't plugged your podcast yet.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. So I host a podcast called the Abbott Mabin Podcast, which I have done a couple of episodes on HPR before. I think I might have done two. One was coming from we went our first odd camp and then talk about what we and how we were talking about what our experience is. I don't know if I've done a second one, but it's like 2014 the last time I recorded, and I heard there's a call for shows, so that's why I wanted to kind of record this show. Yeah, but AdMan Podcast is kind of a techie podcast for sysadmin DevOps people. It's not just Linux, Linux, Windows, VMware, virtualization. It's just where we have a rough idea what we're going to talk about, but we normally end up a lot talking off topic. We're just three guys just chatting about what we've been up to or anything we've found out, really.
Stream of consciousness was one of the descriptions that you were given over email recently.
Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing, I'll be honest.
So yeah, and then Dave does the pre-production of it. For looking at it, must be the last 10 episodes now, I'm guessing,
something like that. Yeah,
and it's definitely improved, and all this is accounts going up. And I mean, plug your podcast?
It'd be rude not to, wouldn't it? So I do a podcast with my good lady wife on a weekly basis called The Bugcast. And that is a music and chat show, which doesn't really have a format or an agenda as such. It's just some damn good music and a bit of waffle in between.
Yeah, I definitely like the chat. It's quite good, the chatting of it. And I normally used to listen to it at the weekend after we released it, doing the housework around the house kind of thing.
Oh, excellent. But we'll put the link to both of those shows into the show notes. So if you want to have a listen to those, you're very welcome.
Yes. Okay. I guess we'll see everyone soon.
Ta-da!
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.